Harsh Fate was bearing down on Xenogorshin with its usual stealthy footsteps. After the battle in which they'd lost Benelli, he'd followed Pick and the others, but he'd lost sight of them. When they'd stopped the train and boarded, Jillian had ordered everyone to split up. Knowing the legend of the Iron Castle, he intended to speak with Grand Duke Drago and make an ally of him, so that he might use the Grand Duke in his search for Annette. And what a coincidence, the girl was actually on the train. When Gorshin lost sight of her, he should have sought out Jillian to inform him of such, but he realized his signal whistle would be of no use here. The layout of the train was so vast and complicated, the sound would be twisted, reflected, and ultimately absorbed. They were all just children lost in a deep jungle. Still not knowing how to call up the schematics, Gorshin wandered through the train, walking in silence down corridors so spacious they seemed like halls. And up ahead, he saw that man. He was right in the midst of battle. Nearly 10 mechanical people surrounded the naked man, some of them blasting him with flames, some hammering him repeatedly with iron fists, and still others slashing at him with lengthy blades. It looked more like a slaughter than a fight. However, before Gorshin's eyes, one mechanical person after another was destroyed. The man's body seemed capable of rendering all their attacks ineffectual. Muscles and organs smashed, shot, and rent wide, closed and regenerated in an instant. He swung them around. That alone left the mechanical people exploding or belching flames. In less than a minute, the man had reduced them all to twisted scrap metal. After the last of them was destroyed, the man began walking in the same direction Gorshin was headed. Instinctively, Gorshin tailed him. The nobleman got the feeling something decisive awaited them. After he'd advanced more than 100 yards, the man swung his right arm to the rear. So great was the speed that even a noble among nobles like Gorshin wasn't able to get completely out of the way. The iron chain and block of stone that flew at the nobleman with supersonic speed took off the right half of his face. Gorshin immediately played dead. Though the nobleman knew he'd be finished if his foe dealt him a coup de grace, the man just kept on walking. Gorshin, of course, started following him once again. After they'd walked another 3/4 mile, the door to another car appeared. The man vanished just in front of him. The way he disappeared, it was as if he'd been swallowed up by another dimension. By the time Gorshin had confirmed that the nearby door, walls, and floor contained no hidden passageway, he was ready to drop from pain and despair.
Gorshin!
The nobleman turned, recognizing the pair of figures headed his way.
Lord Jillian and Resden.
The noble who'd lured out Barry Dawn and his compatriots and turned them into vampires calmly walked over to Gorshin.
What has happened?
Once Gorshin had told him everything, Jillian's whole face twisted with delight.
So, Dee, the Krishkin girl, and the Grand Duke are all here. Excellent. I shall rid us of the lot of them.
The trio went over to the door where the naked man had vanished. Jillian seemed to stroke the space lovingly. After doing so for about a minute, he returned to his normal demeanor. Seeing that sweat was forming on the brow of this noble among nobles, Gorshin was shocked. Tremendous mental powers were being called into play.
We may enter. I'm going in.
As Jillian pressed forward, first the end of his right foot vanished, followed by his leg, his torso, and then his face.
Next, you may pass, Quake.
It had to have come from the naked man's vanishing point. The rotund man was also swallowed up by thin air. Gorshin stepped forward, staggering all the while. But at that very moment, a gleam of white shot from the empty space to pierce his heart. Knocked back by the force of the impact, He fell to the floor with an iron stake sticking out of his chest.
But why, Lord Jillian?
His stunned query drew a reply from the empty space.
The man you were following is a being on the level of the Grand Duke or myself. The reason your face hasn't returned to normal after all this time, purebred noble though you are, is because he did that to you. Against a man such as that, you would be no more than a hindrance. Rest well. Someday, we shall meet again in the next world.
Unlucky was the only way to describe a person who had twice known fear that reached down to the very pit of their heart. Annette was unquestionably one such person. As the girl was waiting for Pick and the Countess, a gigantic shadow had filled her field of view in a single heartbeat. The next thing she knew, she was back on that same operating table, and the Grand Duke was looking down at her, just as before. However, this time, she had neither Countess Genevieve nor the left hand to aid her.
What are you doing?
She surprised herself with how calmly the query came out. She must have had nerves of steel.
Experiments.
Oddly enough, as the Grand Duke looked at Annette, his eyes were home to a boundless grief.
I heard about that from Miss Genevieve. She said you performed certain operations here, trying to make a bridge between mankind and the nobility. But she said they were fearful experiments.
Indeed.
How long did this go on?
Roughly 5,000 years. Would you like to hear how many procedures I performed in that time?
No. Were you successful?
No.
For no reason in particular, Annette felt a sorely missed emotion sweep through her heart. It was compassion.
As far as I know, there was but a single success. And it wasn't one of ours.
Were your experiments really all that important?
I believed so.
Annette saw the scalpel that gleamed in the Grand Duke's right hand. Sweat poured from every inch of her. Though she thought herself composed, her body trembled faintly, and it seemed unlikely to stop.
And the Great One said so, too. There may well be nobles who would doubt that I readily pledged my support. Although I never dreamt it would stretch over so many long, cruel years. I'm fine with that. Someday the Great One's ideal will be realized. The humans subjected to these experiments were glorious stepping stones, I thought.
His scalpel flashed into action. Flesh split open and bright blood gushed from a wound that seemed to smile.
After 5,000 years of this, however, I realized that every time I performed an operation, I injured myself.
The Grand Duke took the scalpel away from his gore-spattered throat.
I immediately knew the cause. When it dawned on me that I empathized with the humans, I considered destroying myself. It was Genevieve who stopped me. She told me that if I were to die then, no one would be saved. And so we began again, believing in tomorrow, even if it was a tomorrow that might never come.
You poor man.
She actually meant those words.
Your experiments ultimately failed, didn't they?
Correct.
He tightened his fist and his grip on the scalpel. But he quickly shook his head in denial.
No, we failed. Next time will be different. Someday our experiments and the hopes of the dead will bear fruit. Toward that end, young lady, I have need of you.
Don't.
The Grand Duke was changing right before Annette's eyes. All the color drained from him. And as his eyes filled with an evil gleam, they gave off bloodlight.
Forgive me, Annette. I apologize to you and to your family. And I swear that once our aim is accomplished, I will compensate all of you for the fear and grief you suffered by offering up myself to the very next dawn. Forgive me. Please, make me stop, Genevieve.
In a hand plagued by the past, the scalpel rose. Its blade no longer gleamed on account of the blood that clung to it.
Do not interfere, Pomerola!
Drago spun around and his scalpel flew, not only piercing the figure who stepped into the room right between the eyes, but exploding through the back of his head to embed itself in the wall behind him. The man extended his right hand toward the Grand Duke.
You!
With his first step, the wound to the back of Shank's head closed, and by the second, it was gone completely.
Do you resent me, Pomerola? There was but one step to go. In your case, we were just one step shy. But being sure that one step, it was failure, all the same. Curse me, hate me if it please you, but do not interfere.
Ah, but I must interfere.
Even before the Grand Duke could turn his eyes to the entrance, the second intruder was primping his copper hair.
I shall be taking the girl. Grand Duke, feel free to continue this nonsensical contrition for your foolish experiments in the past for so long as you like.
And just who are you?
My apologies. Xenogillian is the name. I have returned to this world for the first time in ages.
The Xeno clan, I am familiar with, as I am with the name of the Grand Duke's poor excuse for an heir. What business have you with the girl?
A small matter, but one for which there can be no substitute. Might I trouble you to hand her over?
Your request is denied. You would do well to remember your station, stripling.
If you were an actual noble, I would. However, I owe no niceties to a specter from the past. I am taking the girl. You may remain in the company of this other creature of antiquity.
As Jillian said that, his right arm swept in the direction of the failure, who stood there as if rooted. A dagger flew through the air with searing speed, and the power of a noble knocked the naked man back a good 15 feet. Undoubtedly, Jillian had taken very clear aim. When the man went flying, the Grand Duke was directly in his path. The two of them collided with the operating table. As the Grand Duke prepared to rise again, a pair of hands clamped down on his shoulders. Those of Pomerola, lifting the gigantic 700-pound figure as if he were nothing, Pomerola hurled the noble. Jillian was directly in the line of fire. He was about to step to the side when something as thick as a tree trunk caught him in the throat. The Grand Duke's arm. The younger nobleman was knocked all the way back to the door while he slammed into the wall before stopping. Once he'd swiftly gotten to his feet again, Jillian saw the Grand Duke draw the sword he wore on his hip, the enchanted blue blood. Wrath of the dead trapped in its blade would drain the blood and life from any it touched. Jillian's blade parried the blow, but the young nobleman's eyes went wide. He could sense something within his body being taken from him. Reeling, Jillian leaned against a nearby control console for support. Both his hands and face were red. Blood gushed from his pores. Was it a regret at having recklessly challenged a legendary greater noble to battle that flickered across his face? No. As beads of blood covered his face, Jillian grinned.
Quick! You know what to do, I take it?
And that being said, he adjusted his grip on his longsword. A second blow from blue blood rained down against it. The instant Jillian parried it, a bloody mist engulfed both men.
Oh, you bastard. How in hell's name did you manage that?
For the Grand Duke had felt all of his own blood being drawn out as well. Strange as that seemed.
Whenever an opponent touches me, not only directly but even with something they hold, their special abilities flow into me. Grand Duke, you're going to be slain by your own power.
Jillian's eyebrows arched as if he'd suddenly thought of something. That was followed by his lips turning up in a grin and his fangs showing themselves.
I shall inherit this train of yours and its experiments. Only the experiments will take on a new form.
Blue blood flashed out, and every time Jillian parried it, the two of them were clouded in vermilion. After a number of these block blows, Jillian was nearly tripping over his own feet. When fighting under identical conditions, the one with the greater strength would prevail in the end. And the Grand Duke was Jillian's superior in both energy and brute strength. Parrying a horizontal slash, Jillian could take no more and backed away.
Quake!
The man had been waiting off to one side, and that gigantic meatball body of his became a blur. The weights he wore from the waist up shook wildly. The room rippled and the ceiling twisted. The ultra-powerful shockwaves Quake read and gave off could take the flesh off a human's bones. The Grand Duke's gigantic form was thrown horribly off balance. As Drago spread his arms to either side and planted his feet, Jillian charged straight at his chest. His blade pierced the left side of the Grand Duke's chest, poking all the way out of his back.
Genevieve.
The giant planted his beloved sword in the floor and leaned on it.
Now, I will finally be released.
And then he became a huge mound of ash.
That settles that.
As Jillian regained his balance on the still quaking floor, waves of excitement swept through his body. He pictured himself glowering out from the train as it sped through the world of darkness. He would travel the world on this train. From every land, he'd take lovely young women and drink them dry.
But first...
Finally, with a chance to recall his initial goal, he turned his eyes to the fallen operating table.
What?
Aside from the surgical implements scattered around the table, there was nothing to be seen on the floor. No, that wasn't true. There was one person. Shank Pomerolo was in the process of heading straight for Jillian. A failure who lived only for slaughter. Was that the shape of the future for humanity and nobility alike? Jillian's sword rose. Just then, the door opened. As they turned to look in that direction, both Jillian and the failure froze. The newest intruder was that striking.
So you made it all this way, Dee. It would seem it's the risen Grand Duke you seek, but I have slain him. Your usefulness thus at its end, here you shall die, Hunter.
Dee's ears caught a bass growl. It was Pomerolo. The man's expression had changed. His eyes gave off a red glow, and he exposed a pair of hitherto unseen fangs, making clear his murderous intent. But more incredible than anything were the flames of malice that scorched him from head to toe. The unbalanced failure had finally found an opponent worth defeating.
An acquaintance of yours, Dee.
Gazing at Dee, Jillian furrowed his brow.
No, it would seem not. That being the case, why should he hate you so? Could it be you bear a striking resemblance to a man who did terrible things to him?
Pomerolo charged forward, knocking everything out of his path. He closed to 15 feet, then swung his arms. The chains and their blocks of stone arced through the air like ropes to assail the hunter from both above and below, and Dee seemed to glide right between them. Driving his sword through Pomerolo's heart was actually shockingly easy. Once Dee stepped away, Pomerolo staggered. But he quickly stood up straight and strong again. His throat and chest were both free of any trace of wounds.
An outstanding failure, wouldn't you say, Dee? If this is an example of failure, how incredible would a success be, I wonder? I should like to meet one. However, against an opponent who can be run through the heart without dying, your battle will never end. My apologies, Dee. I've decided to aid this creature.
And as he said that, the nobleman bounded. 12 feet high, and over 20 feet he sailed. But when Jillian swung his blade low, there was no killing lust behind it. Dee didn't try to evade the blow, but rather parried it. And that was precisely what Jillian had been after. He would absorb all of Dee's abilities and use them to slay the hunter. As the nobleman practically pried the blade free, his face was covered with horrible wrinkles.
Such power! The energy is...
Zeno Jillian was actually weeping.
Exactly how much? No. That will be enough. It's more than I can handle. Let's settle this, Dee. Quake!
The beefy face blurred, and a second shockwave assailed the room. Dee reeled. Now, Jillian charged the hunter. But his foot seemed to catch on something. As the noble tumbled forward, the vampire hunter's blade flashed down at the base of his unprotected neck. Dee turned his eyes not to the head that went flying, but to the body that collapsed. His left hand appeared down by the noble's foot, skillfully dashing over to Dee, making a light bound and sticking to the end of the hunter's left arm.
The Grand Duke stuck me good, but I played dead and slipped into his pocket. I got a net out. There's only one of them left, so hurry up and take care of him.
The instant the hoarse voice said that, a powerful shudder ran through the entire car. When Dee turned to look at the source of the tremor, the rotund figure, who looked to be made of big flesh bags and chunks of meat falling off, his bones were crumbling, and in the blink of an eye, he'd been reduced to a pile of dust. When Quake Resden fought Jillian, he died once. Perhaps the massive shockwave just now was his way of bidding farewell to the world before setting off on death's journey with the master who granted him a mock life.
That ain't good. Seems the reactor's been nailed. Gotta hightail it out of here, and fast.
What about the kid?
Oh, worried about him, are you? Relax. I told him how to get to the exit and send him on ahead. What the...
Countless figures had gathered around Pomerolo and were staring at the hunter and his hand. Their skin was pale, their eyes charged with lunacy, their limbs twisted, and their bellies trailing innards.
Test subjects, I take it. Did they get out with that last jolt, or are they just phantoms? Doesn't matter either way, I guess. Just let them be. They've got their own lives to lead, as the living dead, though. Gee, you! I smell something burning. Hurry up!
The eye-popping shockwave had hit the desperately fleeing Pick and Annette as they were making their way down a corridor. Still without a clue as to what had happened, Pick got back to his feet, having only banged his right shoulder on the wall.
Holy shit!
It was a wonder the boy's heart didn't stop dead. The Countess lay on the floor, and to her left, an iron girder about 20 feet long had apparently fallen. The problem was, Annette's upper body was sticking out from under it.
Are you all right?
The pain of his shoulders forgotten, the boy raced over, and a pale face smiled up at him.
Can you pull yourself free?
No, it's no use. It won't budge an inch and my legs are pinned. It hurts.
The boy grabbed hold of the girder and tugged. But naturally, it wouldn't move at all.
Hang in there. I'm gonna go get Dee.
By then, it will be too late.
What?
The boy turned to see the noblewoman pinned under iron pipes. From the waist down, she'd been completely crushed. It was a wonder she was even still alive.
There, down the corridor. See for yourself.
Following her gaze, Pick went pale. Figures beyond numbering were pouring down the passageway. Like a needle, Memory picked at Pick's brain.
They are the ones you glimpsed in the basement. It would seem they escaped with the aid of that shock. These are creatures without an iota of thought, and they live solely to destroy.
And it was you guys who made them that way, wasn't it?
A fine mess this is. I no longer have my strength. At this rate, the girl and I will both be torn to ribbons.
What should I do? Damn it all!
Run for it, Pick. If you don't, you'll be killed too. Thanks for everything you've done for me. You've done more than enough. Now you have to think about yourself, okay?
You've got to be kidding me. Do you expect me to run off like a coward after coming all this way? No, man. Tell. Nobody human could do that.
Please, flee. Strive as you like, but you will accomplish nothing here. As the young lady said, you'll meet a pointless death. At least let us see you go free.
Her words were practically an indictment. There were approaching footsteps. One person, two, 10, then 20. Pick fell silent. He was weighing a thought he had. His face grew pale from the staggering nature of that notion.
Pick!
Annette saw the boy look up. Such a sad face he wore, but also such a proud one.
No! There's only one way out of this!
The boy gave her a manly smile. When Dee arrived on the scene, what he saw there were corpses beyond numbering, with Annette lying in a spot a short distance away.
What about the other two?
They left.
Tears glistened in her eyes.
He got me out from under that girder and pulled Genevieve from the wreckage. Then he took care of all those things. They told me if I stayed here, you'd be along. And with that, they left.
The boy had moved a girder to save the girl. There was no way he'd be able to do that. He needed more than human strength. And by her side, there was the noblewoman. There was something he could do. Only one play. From the depths of the corridor, there flowed a doleful melody. Was it a serenade they played? 30 feet away, there was an emergency exit. Opening the door, the hunter found a familiar face, smiling sheepishly. It was Hiki. His wiry frame was wrapped in a thin membrane. He was an unlikely person in an unlikely place. It knocked the breath right out of Annette.
What are you doing?
Actually, I've been trailing the train for a good while now. I was looking in through one of the windows, and I just happened to catch the most unbelievable scene. I suppose all my colleagues bit the dust, right? All seems pretty pointless now. I'm throwing in the towel on this one. Grab a hold of my hands. This train's in a bad way.
First things first. It's convenient you happen to be here.
Well, when I poked my head in a little while ago, I happened to run into the little guy. That's when he told me to come here. You know, now he's a...
Go.
Several seconds later, the three of them were down on the ground watching the vehicle race away. It could no longer be described as a black shape. Flames and pale sparks shot from it in a number of places, making it look like a colossal beast covered with wounds.
I wonder where they'll go. Just suppose, if the two of them put the fire out, would they live on the train forever?
Could be. You know what they say. Home is where you hang your hat. The kid's got guts. Maybe someday he'll start some new experiments.
Now outlined in flames, the train was dwindling on the horizon. Apparently, it was headed east. The sky there was beginning to shine with stark light.
The boy kept his promise.
Hiki nodded.
But I didn't ask him for...
Annette began wiping at her tears.
Not a promise to you. One he made to himself. He said he wanted to become a hunter.
Dee touched his left hand to the brim of his traveler's hat, as if bidding a gentle farewell. A few minutes later, When the morning sun shone sleepily on the spot, the three of them were nowhere to be seen. Vampire Hunter D 24, Throng of Heretics, written by Hideyuki Kikuchi and Yoshitaka Amano, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2016, Hideyuki Kikuchi and Yoshitaka Amano. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the authors and Dark Horse Comics. Production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Scott McCormick. Featuring David Quiqui as D. Terrence Aselford as the Left Hand. Brian Kim McCormick as Pick. Jillian Levine Sisson as Annette. Gabriel Michael as Gorshin. Aure Nash as Countess Genevieve. Ian DePriest as Hiki. Eric Mester as Grand Duke Drago. R.J. Bailey as Benelli, the Grim Reaper. Kay Alluvian as Jillian. And N.J. Aguna as Granny. With additional performances by Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Delton Engel Sorrell, Ryan Delasung, Martin Dickinson, Bill Gillette, Damon Allams, David Burke, Raina Gabriel, Megan Dominey, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, and Dominique Salvation. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Scott McCormick. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Lauren Wood. Vampire Hunter D theme by Robert McDonald. Original music by Robert McDonald and Jameson Hunt. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Vampire Hunter D will return in Undead Island. On an isolated island, vampire nobility run a mysterious laboratory, continuously pumping out a white mist which compels the inhabitants of a nearby fishing village to become the vampire's slaves. When the village tries to retaliate, their fighters never return. The vampire hunter known only as D has been sighted on the island, but how did he come to be there? And whose side is he on? And will any mortals survive the brewing conflict? If you want more Undead Full Cast Audio Fantasy, keep listening for a sample of Bubba Hotep by Joe R. Lansdale. Available now in creepy graphic audio.
Boy, you're Ken?
My daddy.
I haven't seen you here before.
Only been here once before, when I checked him in.
Oh, that was 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Were you and him friends?
Elvis considered the question. He didn't know the real answer. All he knew was Bull listened to him when he said he was Elvis Presley and seemed to believe him. If he didn't believe him, he at least had the courtesy not to patronize. Bull always called him Elvis, and before Bull grew too ill, he always played cards and checkers with him.
I just roommates. He didn't feel good enough to say much. Just sort of hated to see what was left of him go away so easy. Oh, he's an all right guy. He mentioned you a lot. You're Cali, right?
Yeah. Well, he was all right.
Not enough you came and saw him, though.
Don't try to put some guilt trip on me, mister. I did what I could. Hadn't been for Medicaid, Medicare, whatever that stuff was, he'd have been in a ditch somewhere. I didn't have the money to take care of him.
Elvis thought of his own daughter, lost long ago to him. If she knew he lived, would she come to see him? Would she care? He feared knowing the answer.
You could have come and seen him.
I was busy. Mind your own business, here?
The chocolate-skinned nurse with the grapefruit tits came in. Her white uniform crackled like cards being shuffled. Her little white nurse hat was tilted on her head in a way that said she loved mankind and made good money and was getting regular dick. She smiled at Callie and then at Elvis.
How are you this morning, Mr. Huff?
All right, but I prefer Mr. Presley or Elvis. I keep telling you that. I don't go by Sebastian Half anymore. I don't try to hide anymore.
Why, of course. I knew that. I forgot. Good morning, Elvis.
Her voice dripped with sorghum syrup. Elvis wanted to hit her with his bedpan.
Did you know we have a celebrity here, Miss Thomas? Elvis Presley. You know, the rock and roll singer?
I've heard of him. I thought he was dead.
Callie went back to the dresser and squatted and set to work on the bottom drawer. The nurse looked at Elvis and smiled again. Only she spoke to Callie.
Well, actually, Elvis is dead. And Mr. Huff knows that. Don't you, Mr. Huff?
Hell no. I'm right here. I ain't dead yet.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.